Welcome to Chew It with Pruitt, the regularly released podcast where your host, Kenny Pruitt, talks to people he knows about stuff that matters to them, all while hopefully making some new friends along the way. Join in on the conversation via email, contact@chewitpruitt.com, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @ChewItPruitt, or literally let your voice be heard at 507-407-CHEW. He has a high school diploma and a microphone, so you might as well listen. He's Kenny, and this is his podcast.
How is it that my mood can change so quickly in a split second over something so insignificant? Moments ago, I just finished watching a Blazers game in which we lost by 1 point, where the other team made a game-winning shot with 0.4 seconds remaining. I instantly went from joy to sorrow, from excitement to pain. And I wasn't even the one playing the game. A single moment in time that has no bearing on my actual everyday life, yet I allow it to emotionally affect me. To make matters worse, the shot shouldn't have counted. Clearly on replay, it shows that before he attempted the game-winning shot, the player with possession of the ball stepped out of bounds and the referees didn't call it. Of course, everyone in the stadium seeing the replay was able to see that the referees missed the call. Everyone watching the game at home was able to see that the referees missed the call. But due to the rules of the NBA, there was nothing that could be done about it. Even though it was a blatantly missed call. And certain things are allowed to be reviewed for accuracy. But for whatever reason, whether a player stepped out of bounds or not, is not one of those things. Of course, as a fan of the Blazers, I crave justice for this wrongdoing. The Blazers should have been victorious. We're in the middle of a playoff hunt. It could literally come down to one win or one loss, and this could be the difference between us making the playoffs and not making the playoffs. Wizards fans, on the other hand, are in a place that I've been before, where a wrong call greatly benefited them with a victory in this game. As much as it pains me, life is not fair. The Blazers should have won this game, and they didn't, but it is just a game after all. I am a Christian, and that's a word that can be very polarizing in America today. The name Christian can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. Half the country largely blames people that call themselves the same thing I call myself, a Christian, for the state of our country, for the fact that we have a president who, without a doubt, is the most hated of my life. And I bring this up because one of the main tenets of the Christian faith is justice, or rather, the lack thereof. As a human in life, or just as a Blazers fan, it is my natural instinct to demand justice. However, the Bible tells me that justice is the last thing that I should demand. For if I demand justice for others, justice will be demanded of me. And if you believe the things I believe, you know that it is grace, not justice, that our faith is built on. Damian Lillard is the Trailblazers' best player. I don't know his religious views, but I saw a perfect example of grace at the conclusion of tonight's game. As a fan who felt robbed by the outcome, I can only imagine how much deeper he feels the transgression. However, as coaches and other players berated the referees as they walked off the court due to the missed call, Damian Lillard, who had more of a right to be upset than anyone else on the team, walked up to the opposing players and congratulated them on their victory, knowing that he's been in their shoes before with a victory that was undeserved, and that they've been in the Blazers' shoes with victory being unfairly awarded to the opposing team. More and more, it seems the norm to demand justice for wrongdoings. And while I believe it is my duty as an American, as a Christian, as a human, to stand up for others when there are wrongdoings done to them, I am also reminded tonight from watching the Blazers, of all things, that the example given to me by Jesus, when things are done wrong on my behalf, is to expose the transgression by offering grace. One person that constantly has to show me grace is my lovely wife, Holly. In this episode of Chew It with Pruitt, we conclude part two of my interview with her. Once again, we were driving in the car on the way home from our date. I think I did a little better job editing this time, so the sound quality is significantly better than the time before. So I'm still trying to figure out a feasible way to record in the car, but I think this one's actually pretty listenable. So I hope that you enjoy part two, where we delve into Holly's love of fiction and her passion for empowering women. So we're back for part two of my time with my lovely wife.
Hey.
Holly Pruitt.
That's me.
Otherwise known as the drive home.
Yeah.
From our date night at Olive Garden.
We did go to the mall. We learned about Tesla cars.
We did.
They have a Tesla store at this mall.
Yes, there were two different Teslas in just the store in the mall.
Yeah.
So we just decided to go in and look, and they're pretty fancy cars.
Yeah. Now, okay. So we looked at a crossover SUV and then a sedan.
Yeah.
The crossover SUV had configuration to fit seven people.
Yes.
Up to seven people.
Yep.
And then the back, the third row had car seat anchors.
Yes.
Like, how are you getting kids back there? They'd have to climb over the, like, you couldn't fit all car seats in the back row because you have to have, like, it's not like a minivan. There's no space for them to get back there.
Well, I mean, you obviously would have to move the seats. I mean, like,
if you had the car seats in the very back, then you, you'd have to load the back first. I mean, any of the case, no matter what, no matter who has to sit in the back seat, you have to move the seats forward, let them climb back there, get them buckled in, and then move the seats forward, or move them back, I guess, and then the middle row gets in.
I guess that's why I always want to drive a minivan.
Yeah, I mean, you do love your minivan.
I really do. It's so fantastic.
You also love TV.
Yeah.
Harry Potter.
Yep.
You mentioned those two specifically, 30 Rock being your favorite.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to focus on individual things because I think that, well, just quite frankly, we don't have the time.
Right. We only have 35 minutes left in our drive.
What I will focus on and ask you about is your love of fiction in general.
Okay.
Now, that isn't 100% accurate because you also love reality TV.
Oh, yes, I do.
But
that still can be considered a work of fiction.
It's almost fiction. So why is it that you think you have such a strong connection to fiction?
I enjoy being taken into a different world. Have a hard time with, I don't have a hard time with nonfiction, all nonfiction for this reason, but like I just think about like a book that really bothers me is Eat, Pray, Love.
Okay.
And it was like this huge sensation. They made a movie out of it, even.
Is that Julia Roberts?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think I was a teenager when this book came out.
That's Elizabeth Gilbert?
Maybe.
Is that who wrote it?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay. Sorry.
And even as a teenager, what I saw was just, like, privilege. Like, I'm so sorry that your marriage fell apart. Lucky you. You get to travel the world for months, doing whatever you want. Sounds awesome. Yes, everybody should take this advice. It was just so bizarre to me that this was like, oh, I should write a book about this. Everybody needs to know about this. This cool thing that I was able to do that all the other millions of people who've gotten divorces can't do. So it was just like, to me, it just felt like it was coming from a place of privilege. And I struggle with that a lot in people, like, trying to, like, give advice or even relay their own story without recognizing the context of their story. And, like, maybe it's not going to be that way for everybody else. And so so that is what I struggle with in nonfiction a lot. Now, obviously, that's not what all nonfiction is. It's not all autobiographies.
Yeah.
And on top of that, even if it is somewhat autobiographical, it's not going to be something as frivolous as Eat, Pray, Love. Because, like, I've read Night by Elie Wiesel, and that's just, you know, one of the most amazing books I've ever read. Also, nonfiction, if it is, see, that's the thing, if it's nonfiction, I don't really want it to be super frivolous. So I try to read maybe more serious stuff, and then it gets depressing.
Okay.
So I don't like that. So I just like being taken away into like a completely different world.
That's fair. So you, if something is fantastical, you'd rather it be fictional.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe representing something allegorically or whatever versus it just being somebody's true fantastical experience that is maybe unrelatable because you could not recreate that same experience for yourself.
Yeah,
but you can imagine yourself in a fictional story.
Yes. It is not, I mean, yes, it's unrelatable for me, but I also feel like it's unrelatable for the masses, and I think that's kind of where you're going to lose me.
Okay. So, I mean, for example, just for yourself specifically, you're able to maybe more relate to Liz Lemon than you are to Tina Fey herself.
Well, I did read Tina Fey's book, and it was pretty funny. It took me a while to get into. When I was thinking about that in my head, because I did like Bossy Pants, I started trying to read Amy Poehler's book, and I had read a couple excerpts, and I was like, this doesn't sound good, and I don't dislike Amy Poehler, and then I started trying to read it, and I just could not get into it at all. She, like, described her divorce as, like, the metaphor she used for her divorce was somebody putting everything she cares about on a blanket and then throwing it up in the air. And it just is a very, to me, that just does not, I don't know, it did not create an image to me which a metaphor should. I felt like it was just poor writing. So that right there just kind of gave me a poor taste as far as like what the quality might be of the writing, which once again, I don't dislike Amy Poehler. I think she's actually a great comedy writer and a great actress. Like, I enjoyed a lot of things that I've seen her in. And so, I don't know. It was just bizarre to me. But I also think that kind of goes to, like, what my expectation is going into a book or any sort of media. So if I have lower expectations, I'm not going to be let down, typically. Because if it's not good, I didn't expect it to be.
Yeah, that's fair.
And if it's really good, then it's that much better.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you are someone who does just enjoy, I think, stepping into someone else's shoes for a period of time in some way, but then the things that you end up being most passionate about, you actually are stepping out of reality into some sort of alternate reality, into, you know, like, be it Harry Potter, be it 30 Rock.
Yeah, I can see that. Makes sense. Sounds like me.
Not that, like, you live in a fantasy world, but...
No, I'm very... I'm actually, in our marriage, the one who... I feel like I'm more of the realist, or, like, I'm the one that kind of pulls you back versus me, the, like, fiction lover.
I wonder if everyone has a need in some capacity to live out their, like, dreams, but some people are more prone to do that through consuming art, and other people do it more through creating art.
Yeah.
And if I'm more the type that, like, I actually get my release or my, you know, fulfillment of my, like, dreams or fantasy or whatever through the creation of things, through, you know, cultivating ideas and making something, and you are more someone who gets the fulfillment from consuming something that someone else made.
That sounds about right, because I honestly am not creative, and not only am I not creative, I don't like having to be creative. Like, it actually makes me really upset.
Like, in what way? Like,
anger.
Well, I mean, like, when do you have to be creative?
I don't know. Like, when our kids ask me to draw something.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, fair. I don't get, like, okay, I said anger, and then the example I gave was my kids asking me to draw. I don't get mad at our kids, but, like, it's frustrating to me, like, that I can't draw, but I also have literally zero desire to be able to do it. My brain just doesn't work that way. Like, you will have, you know, random business ideas, and you'll ask, you know, you'll talk with me and, like, ask me for input. And, like, I do get frustrated because, one, we're not going to do it, and I get why, like, you just like using that part of your brain, but then, two, like, I don't like using that part of my brain, so it's actually very difficult for me. And so I think that's why I end up being the one that pulls you back.
It's probably true. It's a good insight. I feel like that we are getting down to the bottom of things here.
Yeah, this is good therapy.
Why
don't you know how to talk about feelings?
I don't know.
Okay, so, every year our church does the marriage retreat, and the last one, it was like talking about basically like how you process feelings and like kind of like splitting people up into how, like, what group they fell under, or like what type of like processor they fell under. And like Kenny, I think, was an avoider.
Yeah.
And like that he just like doesn't. And like, anyway, all that to say, so, like, for the avoider, like, you were, like, given a list of, like, feelings words to, like, help you communicate your feelings. And so one day, like, within a week, I feel like, of this marriage retreat, I was like, how are you feeling today? I asked him, and he didn't answer. He sat, and he goes, I'm sorry, I'm trying to think of a, like, something to say other than fine, because that's what he'll always say is fine. It's like, okay. So a couple more, you know, maybe another like 15, 20 seconds goes by, and he says, I'm feeling good. And so after like close to a minute of thought, the two things that he could come up with were fine and good. It's like my favorite Kenny story.
Well, yeah, I guess. Good was communicating something different than fine.
Yeah, I guess. Because according to you, if I say I'm fine or something's fine, it's actually the opposite of fine. And you used to hold, like, when we were dating, you would, like, hold me to that. You would say, like, no, what's wrong with you? Like, and I just, and like, we would get in fights, like, because I wouldn't tell you what was wrong when nothing was wrong. And you would, like, okay, fine, we won't do that. I'm like, no, I said it was fine.
That's a cultural thing. I know for a fact that we have on multiple occasions seen or heard other people make reference to the fact that if a woman says something is fine, then it is not fine.
But you don't get to assume, like, first of all, I am not a stereotype. Second of all, when more than once this has happened, and it's like turning into a fight because you refuse to believe what I'm saying, then maybe it is fine.
I mean, that's not an issue anymore. Despite the fact that there were times when you would say something was fine and it wasn't fine.
Do you feel like I've turned the tables on you and now I'm interviewing you?
I feel like you're trying to.
No, go ahead, babe.
I think the last thing I wanted to cover was something you spent a bulk of your time talking about when you were describing yourself, and it was your passion for empowering women.
Okay.
And I kind of wanted to explore that along with the idea that, like, passion or message or intent sometimes is the more important thing than actually the vehicle for accomplishing that passion or message.
Yeah.
Because I think that one thing that you have done really well in deciding to do Unique is that you have decided to do it for a very specific reason. You're not like you're not selling makeup because you love makeup and like you love selling makeup. Like, you have figured out your why and you've decided that you can accomplish that why through selling makeup.
Yeah.
So, like, was this something that you just kind of came to the realization simultaneous with the opportunity? You sort of had this revelation, or how did you come about really feeling like you wanted to do something to empower women?
Well, I've been starting to wear Unique makeup, and I really liked it. Like I said, I wear makeup every day. And when I was younger, it was a self-confidence thing. It was, I didn't feel pretty without makeup. I didn't feel like anybody else would think that I was pretty if I didn't wear makeup. And as I got older, I realized, you know, people probably don't think I'm super pretty without makeup, but I kind of just don't care because I can't change how I look, you know, like on a permanent basis. Like, this is my face. So the reason why I wore makeup changed. And then just kind of in conjunction with that, I would hear people, you know, like I would hear other mom friends talk about what they were losing in being a mom, or like there's even just like the joke of, or you know, like the stereotype of the frazzled mom that has stains all over her clothes and, you know, is wearing, you know, yoga pants, the same yoga pants for 5 days in a row and just can't get her stuff together because she's too focused on everybody else. And I've just never really identified with that at all. But not like in a judgmental way. So I was like trying to figure out what it was that I was like feeling so disconnected with that idea. And then I realized, like, well, I just put makeup on every day. Like, I just do it. And I don't, and like people kind of in response would be like, what if you're not going anywhere? And almost make me feel like I was kind of being dumb or silly about it. And then I just kind of realized, like, that's not empowering. Like, if I want to wear makeup, I should be able to wear makeup. And I had already decided at this point the reason why, you know, I was wearing makeup anyway was just because I wanted to, not because I felt like I needed to. So as far as, like, you know, raising my daughter to be confident or raising my son to know where a woman's worth lies, I don't think that makeup has anything to do with that. And so that's when I kind of started realizing and starting being able to vocalize, hey, like, I don't wear makeup to be pretty. I don't wear makeup, you know, like, I don't wear makeup to hide anything. I wear makeup because nobody cares if I'm wearing it. I get to take 15 minutes, 20 minutes out of my day, listen to a podcast or listen to music, and just do something for me. Like, wouldn't all moms love to do that? Not because they have to, but because they want to, because they get to. And so that's kind of what I have been communicating. And then, yeah, the opportunity came about, and when Kenny and I talked about me starting with Unique, because there is a little bit of a cost associated with it. Not, I mean, pretty nominal, but, you know, like, especially because he makes 90% of our income, I wanted to talk with him about, you know, doing something that is going to cost us a little bit of money. And I think what we both had decided was that for me, it wasn't about necessarily making money, but it was about working to help empower women with the message of why I actually wear makeup, selling products that I actually really love. I do love Unique. And then working with a company whose message also is to uplift and empower women as well.
I think that's very well put, my dear. I think it is important to have some sort of a purpose to things that you do. I think ideally the best thing would probably be to only do things in which you had a specific purpose behind it.
Yeah, but, you know, you gotta pay the bills because, right, you know, I don't make any money off of Unique yet, so.
That's true.
Or maybe ever. Who knows what'll happen.
Maybe someday you'll be able to support our family off of Unique and I can just be a starving artist.
Maybe.
I can podcast for a living but not make any money from it.
Yeah.
While you sell Unique. You sling the makeup.
Gotta sling that makeup. It is amazing. I have switched 100% to Unique, and I do love everything that I use. I don't really miss anything that I get from any other brand that I used to use.
Yeah, it makes me happy that you get to do something you love, that it gives greater purpose to something that you were doing anyway. And maybe that would be a good goal for everyone, is to be more intentional with why you're doing something, or give greater purpose to something that you already do.
Yeah. So, hopefully people, that's what's tough, is like, direct sales gets a bad rap, man. So a lot of people automatically have their guard up. I like envy these people that just like announce they're selling Unique and then all of their friends are like, oh my gosh, let me order. I mean, I have not experienced that, and like, which to be fair, I kind of knew that I wouldn't, so that I'm not like surprised by that. But when people talk about like, oh, you just got to put it out there, it's like, I mean, I'm putting it out there, and people just have to, I don't know, gain your trust and trust that you're being sincere in what you're saying.
Yeah, for sure. Direct sales is very difficult, to say the least. But I think the fact that you never set out to do it for the purpose of being successful, you set out with good intentions. I think that you can be successful in a different capacity.
Yeah.
You can empower people without necessarily like being a top sales rep.
For sure. And that really is my overall goal. And to get discounts on makeup that I love.
If people want to support you in this new endeavor, where can they find out information?
HollyPruitt.com.
HollyPruitt.com, yep.
HollyPruitt.com. That is my direct... it's a direct link to my website, my unique website.
And you can just order straight from HollyPruitt.com.
You can order straight from HollyPruitt.com. And if you have any questions at all, you can email me at ohhello@HollyPruitt.com. That's ohhello@HollyPruitt.
You're assuming that...
That you've set up my email address. That I've set up
this email address that we talked about this evening.
I'm putting it out there. So it's got it. I mean, that's what everybody, all of the like upper level people in Unique say. Just put it out there.
Just put it into the world.
No, they say you have to work really hard to get to that point.
ohhello@HollyPruitt.com.
So now you have something to do, babe.
I like don't have enough to do already. Apparently.
As of recording this, that email address doesn't exist, but we did talk about it before recording this. That email address specifically, not talking about Unique.
Yes.
So, now I'm forcing Kenny to set it up because I don't know how to.
Maybe I'll just teach you how to fish rather than catch the fish for you.
I did buy my domain, though, and set that all up on my own.
It's true. Proof that you can do something new. You can learn something new. You can teach an old dog new tricks.
Who are you calling old?
Thanks for being my first guest, babe.
Thanks for having me. I suggested you have your brother as your first guest, so I feel honored.
I'm glad you are honored. The pleasure is all mine.
I have to admit that it was a strange thing interviewing my wife. I feel like that of any person in the world, I should know more about her than anyone else. But I feel like this exercise was very good for me just in building skills as an interviewer, but also in getting to know my wife a little better. Having intentional time set aside to have a meaningful conversation is always valuable in any relationship. And I look forward to continuing on this journey of diving deeper into things with my friends and family. Thank you so much, Holly, for being my first guest. It truly was a pleasure. And I look forward to having you on again for later episodes. I have my next interview lined up. I'll actually be doing that tomorrow evening. So I feel like I'm off to a pretty good start in being able to hopefully release this semi-regularly or irregularly, as my intro says. I am hoping to have interviews on most every episode. However, I understand that will not always be the case, and I think it is good practice and skill building for me to try to come up with an hour's worth of content without an interview to rely on. So what I will likely do is save a lot of listener feedback for one episode a month and have voicemails to play and emails to read if I'm getting listener participation. I have at this point received one response for last week's heebie-jeebie, but I'm going to save that for that once a month episode where it's mostly listener interaction. However, I do have another heebie-jeebie for episode 2. Once again, this one will not be posted to Facebook or Twitter. This is exclusive to episode 2 of Chew It with Pruitt. As previously stated, all responses to the heebie-jeebie clues released on an episode of Chew It with Pruitt must be done via the voicemail inbox at 507-407-CHEW. The clue for episode 2's heebie-jeebie is ill twig. That is ill twig. Once again, get me your responses to 507-407-CHEW and say anything else you want in there. You also can get a hold of me via email, contact at chewitpruitt.com, on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at chewitpruitt. And I would love to have as much listener participation as possible. So anything and everything is welcome. I realized in last episode, as I was giving shout outs to those that were participating on the Daily Heebie-Jeebies via Facebook, that I left out my good friends, the DeLucas. Both Matt and Katie have also participated, and I felt very bad. I don't even know if they listen to the podcast, but Matt and Katie, you get a special shout out all your own because I failed to mention you in the first episode. And for that, I am truly sorry. Finally, as I end, I want to give an extra special shout out once again to my guest for this episode, my wife. She is away on a women's weekend, much deserved, and so I have been with the children by myself. Every time that I have the sole responsibility of making it through a day with the kids, it reminds me how much I take my wife for granted. It is not easy to find time to get anything done throughout the day when I have the responsibility of caring for our children. So I do not know how my wife gets anything accomplished before I come home from work each night. Let this be a reminder to anyone listening to say thank you to your spouse for the things they do that you can't. Until next time, I know I probably blew it, but this was Chew It with Pruitt.